You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the latest Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Conn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Michael Gannon and Fraser Wilson. Guys, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Daniel.
All good, chaps. All the better to see you guys and your happy, cheery faces.
Absolutely. This is the highlight of the week.
Certainly, yeah. The Dirty Den webcams.
I think the best place for us to start, guys, is maybe Fir Park. Obviously, it's a couple of days ago now, we're recording Tuesday, but, Mick, we need to touch on it as it was such a dramatic win for Celtic and it's such an emphatic nature as well.
Yeah, I'm just so relieved that I wasn't working that game in a midweek on deadline. It was at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night. I think my hair had been on fire that end of the game. We're in 87 minutes, looking for all intents and purposes of being a goalless draw, probably been just about justified. And then, well, hell broke loose, obviously, with the 3 minutes to go, the kind of Palmer's cross shot effort curled into the corner. At that point, you think, well, it's done and dusted, Celtic have done it again, light goal. But then Mull kind of rip up the script and got the score, 95th minute. So you're back to kind of thinking it's going to be a draw, and you think Mull will probably deserve something for the game from what they put into it. But then Celtic being Celtic, they got the part and get one 97 minutes, and it's absolute bedlam. I think Brendan Rodgers after the game touched on it. This is what Celtic does, and he's right. I mean, it's a club that's got a history of late winners and famous for it. It helps when you've got good players. That's where it comes from. It's good players and a good work ethic and a never say die attitude. Put all that together, and it's going to happen more often than not. But it turned out to be a huge victory. I mean, I kind of run the mill 3 points eventually, I suppose. But the ramifications are, I mean, at 86 minutes, I'm sure people are going into Ibrox for the Rangers game against Aberdeen are thinking, oh, points getting spilled here. 87 minutes, well, it's not looking the case. 95 minutes, then part of time, yeah, there's points getting spilled, a chance to close the gap. That goal, 97 minutes, it doesn't just have an impact for part on Celtic. It also sends kind of shockwaves across towards Govan. And all of a sudden, the opportunity to cut the gap has been slammed in their face. And I think it puts a pressure on Rangers in that game. And we all saw what happened. They lose the game and the manager ends up getting sacked. So it was one of those kind of seismic afternoons, really, when it could have swayed either way. It could have changed. I mean, the whole fate of the day and the future could have changed. Sliding door moments, as you might say. So huge. Yeah, absolutely huge. I mean, a goal that gets Celtic 3 points, which is nothing really. But it also sends a chain reaction of events across the city.
Mm-hmm. Because, that's a fair point, Fraser, because when it looks like Celtic only draw, as it did for long periods, and then especially in the 95th minute, you're then looking at the prospect, imagine Rangers would win at Ibrox, then it's down to 2 points, you know, nothing in it almost. You were working at Ibrox at the weekend, and you were saying there was a tangible reaction when the Motherwell goal went in.
It's got to that stage of the afternoon where everyone's on their phone refreshing, because you're right, at 0-0, Rangers fans are thinking, oh, here we go, the gap. Here's a chance to cut the gap to 2 points from 5-2 or 4-2 when we kick off against Aberdeen. So you could see everyone's on their phones just refreshing, waiting for the full-time whistle. They get the blow of Celtic scoring a late goal, deflated. But it was then, I think we're down in the gallows at Ibrox, and fans are all filtering in at that stage because you're maybe half an hour for kickoff at Ibrox. And Blair Spittle comes up with that equaliser. What was it, 95th minute, was it? The rumbles wasn't quite a roar, but the rumbles that filtering through the support waiting to go up the stairs into Ibrox was palpable. And he thought that. Generally, you think that's it. And then it just reminded me of that Celtic win at St Johnston probably roughly a similar time last season, when somehow they appear to have thrown away 2 points and immediately just respond to take all three. It was incredible. It's probably the sign of champions, I would say. And there wasn't quite phones being thrown, but amongst that Rangers support, I think then you could almost sense that it was that kind of monumental gut blow that you just know this is not going to be their season. And then what transpired from there, nobody really would have guessed. 4 points become 7-point gap. Rangers have got no manager. They're right up against it. And all, to all intents and purposes, the Premiership title race almost looks over after 7 games.
Mm-hmm. And we might obviously touch upon the stuff that's happened at Ibrox over the last few days, Mick, but to stick with Celtic for a moment, great result, and you know, particularly the ramifications that come with it, but it still wasn't a great performance. And like, Celtic are 7 points clear, and I don't think it's unfair to say they haven't really kicked the ball yet under Brendan Rodgers. They've not really got going.
Yeah, I don't want to say we haven't not kicked the ball, but I don't think they've hit top gear. And again, there were some nice passes of play at Fir Park, but not quite coming off. I think there's still guys like Yang, he's still finding his feet. He got a run out on the flank. He kind of struggled. I mean, he's mad keen. He demands a ball and he tries to take men on, but at the moment, it's not quite coming off for him. He's not there yet. He looks kind of raw. There's guys like Riho Tati who shown moments of quality, but he's not quite at full fitness yet off his layoff. He's just building his fitness. He's not quite there. Yeah, and we know there's still guys missing defensively in terms of injuries. So Celtic are not kind of firing all cylinders as yet, but they're getting the job done. They're getting results. They're digging it out. And the thing is that there's a lot more to come from them. So, I mean, they're 7 points clear. I wouldn't say not having kicked a ball. I say they're 7 points clear, having not really clicked yet. Mm-hmm. We've not seen Lewis Palmer come off the bench and he got his goal. Looked a bit more lively. I thought he struggled against Feyenoord and his appearance out there. Looked a bit sharper. I think that goal he scored, I mean, I know it's a bit of a fluke, right? But I think if you look at, his, you know, YouTube clips and all that stuff, I think it's a ball he does like, and he has done it before, and it's one of those crosses that you know it can go all the way into the corner of the net, isn't it? You whip it across and it just needs a wee touch somewhere.
Mate, you're a goalkeeper, eh?
Horrible.
Might say it's a fluke, right, but I mean, that is exact, it's got an inch perfect. That's exactly the kind of delivery you want from that, because it just causes all sorts of doubts in defenders and goalkeepers' heads. That's what's happened. So I thought it was excellent.
Know yourself, Raz. A nightmare, isn't it? Because you throw yourself out to cut it out. If you don't catch it, you can pit it off your own defender and it's spinning the back of your own goal. You can leave yourself exposed if you don't get there. It's a horrible, horrible kind of ball. And you see them sticking it all the time, these kind of goals. So a great cross. I mean, the pace on it, whip pace, that's exactly what he's aiming for. He's aiming for that back post. If it goes in, bonus. If it's a wee touch, it's a goal anyway. So he showed signs of being a bit positive. We still need to wait and see. Paolo Bernardo wasn't in the bench the weekend, so he's still building fitness. We're not going to see him this week, I wouldn't imagine. Nat Phillips get 30 minutes against Motherwell. Now he's going to have to last the full 90 against Lazio. I mean, he's only played 45 against Dundee. Came with a slight knock, played against Dundee, got a wee knock on your ankle, missed out on Holland. Played about half an hour from the bench at Fir Park. Looked okay, but he's now going to be in against Lazio. So he's going to need to kind of dig in and get through this. He's not played an awful lot of football. I think he's not played before Dundee, I think in January, I think it was. So it's a big night for him this week against Lazio. But in general, Celtic, I think they're getting by just now, but with the promise of more to come. I think that's the kind of positive for Brendan Rodgers right now. I think he knows himself they're not exactly setting the heather on fire, but I think he also knows that, listen, there's better to come from his team. I mean, he's 7 points clear at this stage, what, 6 wins and 1 draw, having a lot of injury problems and new faces settling in and all that stuff. He'll be delighted where he is now. because he knows that the graph is only going one direction, it seems.
Mm-hmm. And see, just mentioned the goalkeepers, I thought it was only right to give a mention to Scott Bain, who came in at the weekend, obviously with Joe Hart suspended. Thought he played really well, pulled off a couple of good saves when needed, when called upon. I feel bad saying this. I thought Segrist was maybe a wee bit of an upgrade on Bain.
That's what he is.
Well, Brendan Rodgers obviously rates Bain, but...
Well, I'm not Brendan Rodgers, but I know I think Benji Segrist is a better goalkeeper than Scott Bain, a safer pair of hands in the basics of goalkeeping, the important parts of goalkeeping. He's better in every department. I mean, even when Scott Bain is at the top of his game, and I thought he did make some really good saves, to be fair to him, he still had that heart and mouth moment when you just knew big Bevis McGabby was going to beat him to that ball a couple of yards out. Why he's not put his fist through it and tried to catch it, I'll never know. Celtic got away with one there. I think it was offside anyway. I think the decision was offside anyway. And he just has one of those, at least one of those in every game for me. Benji Segrist was a top goalkeeper at Dundee United. Joe Hart is clearly number one at Celtic, but I don't understand why Benji Segrist isn't second choice. Whether something's going on behind the scenes, Mick probably know a lot more than me in this regards, but to me, Benji Segrist is a good bit ahead of Scott Bain in terms of goalkeeping.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's a strange thing, Mike, isn't it?
I don't agree. I mean, I think Scott Bain is, he's an international goalkeeper. He's got cap for Scotland. He's had periods when he's done really well for Celtic and elsewhere.
Got an invite in that international trip to Mexico where he got his caps?
Listen, did you get another global pandemic for me? Get a call up?
I heard you got a call up first.
But carry the jackets. I think he's fine. I mean, I get the point. He'll be in every moment. But he's not played much. He's not getting many games in terms of... He's been in all reserve leagues up the Swanee and all that stuff. He's not getting an awful lot of football. Segrist, I don't know. I mean, there's been a few whispers about he kind of behind the scenes and not quite applying himself or maybe being quite a little bit too comfortable in that kind of backup goalkeeper role. He got a game out in Japan pre-season, I think, and he chucked one in. Didn't look that convincing. He's not as good as Bain with the ball at his feet, Segrist. He just isn't. And I know that Rodgers, if you're a goalkeeper for Brendan Rodgers, you need to be able to use the ball, use your feet. And that's where Bain is a guy who's he's gone to a few times through the years, Brendan Rodgers. I mean, he played them, obviously, famously at Ibrox when Craig Gordon missed out De Vries missed out, and he stayed in the team the rest of that season, played in two cup finals, did really well. And also his spells in the team the following season as well. So he's never really let Celtic down. Listen, I get it. He's not as good as Joe Hart, but Joe Hart's... I mean, people slag off Joe Hart. I mean, 75 caps for England. He's a great start to the season. All right, the goal in Feyenoord, I think the wall didn't help him. It was his feet the quickest across? Maybe not. But he's had big saves this year in games that have been tight. You look at Ibrox, big performance, strong, dominant in the box, couple of big saves. The game at Livingston, he gets red card. I thought he was a bit unlucky. I mean, the pitch is really down, man. The ball's bounced and it's just killed stone dead. Given the striker a chance to kind of get through and put his foot through it, and he's exposed. And I think the centre half's one or two clever at that point either. So I wouldn't be flogging him for that one. Scott, I mean, I think Scott is fine. I still think Celtic should have or should soon go and get himself a quality keeper to compete. I don't think Scott Bain and Segrist are going to be competing for number one. So they do need that's an area that'll need to be looked at. I mean, Joe Hart is fine. I mean, he's 36, so and he's got a contract in the season. You've got to think they need to start looking now, maybe January even. But in the short term, I don't think it's a big issue. I mean, I think Scott Bain's fine. He's got the mentality to cope with that role. If you can cope with Ibrox in your debut, you can cope with anything, can't you?
And see, just to finish up on the game of the weekend, guys, Matt O'Riley obviously got the winning goal in dramatic fashion. there was news last week, or was it start last week, that he's set to sign a new bumper contract?
Saturday morning, signed it, yeah. Signed it in the morning, scored in the afternoon.
I mean, that is a brilliant bit of business for Celtic. And he's always been a quality player, but he's slowly developing into maybe Celtic's most important player at the minute. Is that fair?
I think he's top class. That Celtic midfield mixes him more than me. Might not be firing right now, but you won't get much better than McGregor, Hatate, O'Reilly. When those three are in top form, that is a top-class midfield. Matt O'Reilly's legs, energy to get forward, goal threat, presence, everything about him. I think he was a magnificent signing for the money they shelled out. And I think on the back of Hatate and other new deals that have been handed out, I think that was just another great piece of business by Celtic, getting them tied down. And maybe more to follow. I believe Cameron Carter-Vickers, one of the next that they're hoping to get tied down. Is that right, Mick?
Greg Taylor as well, I think.
Greg Taylor, yeah.
Yeah, they're all on the list. They're on the list. It's a good bit of business, isn't it? Getting O'Reilly tied down. O'Reilly, I think, is an exciting one for Celtic. I think it was mentioned at the weekend, and it's quite fitting this week. When you mentioned, Roger said it was a bit like Tom Rogic's last-minute goals for Celtic at Motherwell. I think O'Reilly could be the heir to the Rogic throne at Celtic. Obviously, Rogic this week announced his retirement from football at 30 to concentrate on his family. But you look at the ability that O'Reilly's got with the ball at his feet. Listen, Rogic was a magician, wasn't he? I mean, he could make things happen. But I think O'Reilly has got the potential to do that too. He's only, 22? I think Brendan Rodgers sees him as his next big project player. I think he has thrown a lot of time and effort into developing O'Reilly. And O'Reilly, speaking to him, he's loving it. I mean, I know there was a bit made about in the summer about the kind of slightly kind of barbed comments towards Ange Postecoglou from O'Reilly. He's a very honest guy. I don't think it was a slight on the former boss. I think he just likes the style that Rodgers brings to the management, as opposed to the manager previously. I think he found Big Ange's kind of standoffish kind of stance a wee bit kind of not to his liking. Whereas Rodgers is hands-on. He's working with him really closely, and I think he's lapping it up. And I think you're seeing it on the pitch as well. Listen, he's been quality since he signed. I mean, from the minute he came into Parkhead, he's been brilliant. Mm-hmm. Matt O'Reilly. Last season, maybe a wee slight dip. I mean, listen, he covered for Callum McGregor for 3 or 4 months when he's injured, a deeper role. And then when McGregor came back, Aaron Moy had taken his position further at the pitch, and he kind of stayed there, didn't he, up towards the end of the season. So he kind of lost his position a wee bit for a while. We look at him this season, he's come back. I mean, he's already scored 5 goals this season. He scored 4 all last season. He scored 5 already this season. We're only in the start of October. So he's added goals to his game. He's bringing that bit of magic. And I think that the manager loves him. He's enjoying the relationship with his gaffer. And I think the sky's the limit for him. I think he is the guy who's going to be the main man for the next short to medium term, and longer term, he's going to make Celtic an absolute fortune. That's what I can see, because he's got that kind of Rogic style of it looks a bit languid at times, but great feet, quick feet, vision, and now he's adding goals. I think he will be a major player for Celtic and a major asset going forward.
Can he make a bolt of lightning come out the sky when he scores a last minute Scottish Cup final winner, though, Mick?
That's the challenge for him, isn't it? That was you've seen a few clips recently with Rogic retiring. But that's what Rogic could do that. Rogic could pull out magic, couldn't he?
It's so early. They go early, these Aussies, on the back. What was Aaron Moy, 32, when he hung up the boots in the summer? Yeah. And then Tom Rogic at 30. It's a shame, like, if you like to think he'd have another 4 or 5 years left in his legs, but...
Tom Rogic is one of the most enigmatic players I think I've ever dealt with. In this game, almost like a reluctant footballer, I always think that Rogic, he seemed to be kind of, it wasn't really for him. Same about Aaron Moy was similar as well. It was almost like it was in spite of things. But listen, he mentioned that it's a personal thing with his family and all that stuff. He wants to concentrate on that, and fair play to him. Listen, we'd all like to have that luxury. We just pack in our work and look after the family. Maybe I'd pack it and maybe go play golf, to be honest with you. But it's a shame. Only 30 years old, as well. I must admit, I thought Rogic should have had. I thought he'd be one of these guys like that kind of playing, he's like 35, 36, strolling about with that wonderful left peg. Never widen his pace, obviously. But you look at, I see, back to Matt, right? Look at, he's got the engine. Norgic, that was always the thing he didn't have. He didn't have an engine. Yeah. I mean, an hour. You get an hour at Tom Norgic, and that'd be you. The irony of scoring a last minute goal in the cup final is that I was majorly surprised to still see him there on the pitch at that point in time. Because most games they started, never saw the final whistle. It just never happened. I mean, I think he finds about four games for Celtic in 10 years. But you look at O'Reilly, he has got that engine and the fitness, and he's clearly got a manager who's going to try and polish him into something special. But so he could be, maybe not quite, man. I say Rogic was something special, wasn't he? But
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It might not be far off.
Mac, you mentioned that O'Reilly... it looks like he could make Celtic an absolute fortune when if and when sad fact of life, he does move on. I know what Mac's going to say to this, Fraser, so I'll put it to you, right? No, because I said something similar during the summer and your eyes
told me. You're so predictable, Mac.
No,
that means I've got to say the opposite. What is it?
This sounds like a challenge to me here, Fraz.
No, basically... You know, we, according to reports, Leeds United, you know, were in for O'Reilly at the back end of the transfer window. There was a rumoured amount of 10 million. See if and when clubs come from in January or next summer. The money is that mental now. The money is that obscene, particularly in England. If I was Celtic, I would play into that. I get that, 25 million is the record. I would honestly start at like 30 million. Because I know it sounds mad saying that, but the money's just so obscene now. 30 million's nothing to these clubs.
It's so difficult now, isn't it? To put a price in different markets, what league are they playing in? Thankfully, the answer to that question is always, it's only worth what somebody's willing to pay. If you're going comparatively, who's the last big money player to leave Scottish football?
Otter, 25 million.
It's hard to...
Calvin Bassey, 20-odd million. Tierney, 25.
Yeah, but is it really going to go to Saudi Arabia where it's just ridiculous, stupid monopoly money?
You're looking at your likes here. Your Chris Ayers and all that stuff. It's about 14, 15 million. Odds Edwards, 18 million.
He's a special, special player. I would expect him to be worth 12, 15 million, certainly. I would be looking for upwards of 10 million, considering he's under contract for another 4 years or whatever, if that answers your question. But it is only whatever somebody's willing to pay. I could see him as a Premier League player, though. He's got everything.
Aye, he's a cracking player. I mentioned...
Go ask Mick.
do you think that's outlandish, saying... Look, start at 30 million. And again, I'm coming from the point of view. I mean, looked at Chelsea last night, £1 billion team. I mean, £1 billion has been spent in that team, and they're what, 3-4 players short? I just think 30 million to these clubs, I think most, if they really want them, they pay it.
Well, listen, the key is perform well in the Champions League, get yourself in that Denmark international team, become a fixture in the Denmark team. Because if he's performing for Celtic in Europe and for his national side, then yes, you can start thinking then upwards of 20 million quid. Until then, it's a bit of a struggle, I think, to talk about that kind of money. But
that's fair, aye.
Yeah. So if he gets into that Danish side and gets 7, 8, 9, 10 caps in the next kind of 18 months, and he's had a couple of great performances in the Champions League, then yeah. Stick a zero whenever we want. I still think Celtic will make good money on them. I mean, they signed for 1.5 million.
That's mad.
They'll make at least 10 times that.
Aye.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the model in action.
Hold on, what's that? What's 10 times that? Let me check my calculator. I'm not great at maths. Before I start throwing your figures around.
12 yeah. million.
Yeah. At least that. They get that just now. So, yeah.
Agreed.
I think you can start talking about 20 million quids and all that stuff if he starts getting capped and doing the business in Champions League.
Well, speaking of the Champions League, Celtic are back in action this week. As I say, we're recording on Tuesday. First home game of the campaign against Lazio. Obviously, there's no easy games. I'm not for a minute saying it's going to be easy, but is it perhaps a decent time to be playing Lazio? There seem to be in a little bit of flux. Only two of their opening seven games in Serie A. I think Maurizio Sarri is under a bit of pressure. I mean, do you think that'll count for it, Mick? Or?
Yeah, they're not coming here firing all cylinders. I mean, two wins in eight games, all competitions. Lost to Milan at the weekend. You get the manager complaining about the transfers in the summer. The owner telling the manager to sit down and shut up. it looks like a kind of unhappy camp. They've got a few injury concerns. I mean, they're not looking like they're particularly strong. But they're still a big hitting Serie A side, and they beat Napoli away from home this season. So they're clearly definitely no mugs, that's for sure. They'll get plenty of players that can cause damage. So it's a dangerous one for Celtic. Again, I think they're fortunate in that Celtic are not playing a team that are going to win Champions League here. I mean, you look at the top seeds in the group, Feyenoord, Pot 1, never going to win the Champions League this year, not a chance. Good side, but not going to win the Champions League. Lazio, not going to win the Champions League. They won't think that they're going to win it. Atletico probably hang about to the later stages as they always do. Are they going to win it? I doubt it. So it's tough, but it should be the kind of game where Celtic are thinking this is an opportunity to get some points. I'm not saying that they should expect to get points against Lazio at home, because this is not 2004 when Celtic are probably one of the top six teams in Britain in terms of ability and wages and all this. This is Scotland in 2023. You're playing with a team that are a proper Serie A European side, so it's going to be tough. Celtic have got problems at the back, which I just can't see beyond. I think they've caused Lazio problems. I think that the attack can give them grief. I still think they're lacking in the kind of wide areas in terms of, look at Jota leaving. But I think Kyogo made his work rate and all that stuff. And I think O'Reilly and Itati coming from middle part, I think they will cause problems and create chances. I just worry about the back. I mentioned Phillips, not a lot of football being played. Liam Scales, I think, has been terrific since he came in. Another decent game on Saturday, although the goal, a wee bit of a wonder at the Millwall goal. But he's been terrific. Listen, a guy who's maybe not expected to play that many games at this level, he's stepped in a good job. Listen, that's just where the fear is. Can Celtic keep a clean sheet? That's the big question. Mm-hmm. I don't see how they do, which means they're going to need to score two or three. Can they score two or three? Yes, that's what makes it interesting. If this is a basketball match and it goes 2-1, 3-2, I can see that happening as well. So it's an opportunity, but it could be a wild night.
And Fraser, I think Kyogo will finally get his first Champions League goal tomorrow night. But do you hold out much hope for Celtic?
Aye, I do. Because going back to the original point, I think if you're going to meet Lazio, this is the time to do it. And with Mick, definitely there's going to be goals at both ends. I think Lazio are struggling to keep clean sheets as well. Mm-hmm. But a wee bit like Scotland in their Euro qualifying group, if you're going to grab one of the top two spots, you need to take out a big gun. And Lazio right now, perhaps the biggest gun in that group, I don't know. But this is the time to do it, because they look like they're under a bit of pressure. And the manager certainly sounds like he's under a bit of pressure, blaming everybody. Sounds like a man that's kind of smashed 100 mirrors and walked under a ladder. But if he's complaining about injuries and the fixture list, then Celtic have got it just as bad. So, no, it's game on. Celtic's big players turn up on the night, then hopefully they'll end that 10-year wait for a home win in the Champions League, if I'm not wrong in saying.
I think it was Ajax in 2013 now, which is a mad stat.
But what's the other even madder stat that the online team have come up with this morning? This match day two, Celtic match day two. If the game was match day two, they'd be flying in the Champions League.
They've only lost 3 of 11 match day two fixtures, which is really impressive. And in that includes 1-0 win over Porto, 2-0 over Lyon, 1-0 over Copenhagen, 2-1 against AC Milan, 3-2 against Spartak Moscow, 3-0 against Anderlecht, 3-3 with Man City. So, I mean, I know it won't count for much tomorrow night.
Or anything.
It's not counted for anything the last 13 years or whatever, is it? But 11 years since they last qualified. But still, nice start.
Celtic need to get some of these stats away off their... I mean, we've seen it after the last game. They're saying, oh, one of the team that's played 50 games in Europe, the lowest win percentage. Oh, that's nonsense, right? Celtic's record in Champions League is pretty abysmal for a long time. They need to address that. It needs to be... At some point, they need to pull off a biggie. This would be a big one. But again, if they had a full team out, if they had Cameron Carter-Vickers in there, maybe Naroki alongside him, a fully fit and firing Hatate, that would provide more confidence, I think, for this kind of game. But at the moment, the way it's going defensively, I think they've got... It's likewise happened in Holland, didn't it? They played quite well, but they were just undone by wee moments of indiscipline and disorganisation that cost them. They're going to need to be on it for 90 minutes plus in this game. And if they are, I mean, it might be... I mean, we saw Celtic beating Lazio a couple of years ago in the Europa League. I think Lazio were maybe even stronger at that point.
Yeah.
Celtic definitely were as well. They had to ride it out, and then they caught them twice with last-minute goals in Glasgow and in Rome. I mean, incredible results, really, home and away, beating Lazio home and away. So they showed it can be done. The worry is that... Some of those guys are still there from that, so they might remember it. That's maybe going to fire them up a wee bit as well. Mm-hmm. But remember that night at Parkhead? I mean, Fraser Forster had a couple of, I mean, absolutely unbelievable saves. One in particular, I think, was absolutely sensational from a volley. Remember the save he made from the volley?
Yeah, I remember the noise it made. It was mad. Oh.
Did you get your arm off that volley?
Brilliant. What was the nickname they came up with him after that? The Gran Murala or something?
Well, that was that in the Barcelona. That was in Barcelona. Right. Called him the Great Wall.
No, there was another nickname after that one, but I just edited that bit out.
The big Jammy so-and-so or something like that. But Celtic are going to need something like that again. They're going to need the defence to be heroic, the goalkeeper to pull off some saves, and then take the chances when they come at the other end.
Aye. The big players stood up in those two games, and that's exactly what needs to happen. And as Mick says, the fine margins, the small details that turn into really important details, you have to get right. Starting with keeping 11 men on the park. But no, I do fancy them. I fancy them maybe a 2-1 or a 3-2 to get this Champions League group off and running.
2-1 Celtic. Hugo for scorer. There you go, 50p in that. I don't know what odds it is, but it's got to be worth 50p. I think best to finish this week, guys, just a couple of minutes on the goings-on across Glasgow. I know this isn't the Rangers podcast, obviously, but I think looking at it from a Celtic point of view, Michael Beale's doomed spell at Rangers. I mean, Mick, it kind of, to me, the thing I took from it was Celtic went out and got a proven manager, and they had to pay well for a proven manager in Rodgers, but it just shows you get what you pay for. You know, Michael Beale, I think he managed 19 games before he came to Rangers, and ultimately, it's kind of shown.
Well, we've all been kind of writing about and talking about the Celtic's need for a marquee signing in the summer. It turns out they did get a marquee signing in the summer, and it was the manager. I mean, they went and got a box office manager with nearly 700 games under his belt as a manager. He's only 50 years old, and he's nearly 700 games. In contrast, across the city, Michael Beale has, 22 as a manager? It's almost not a fair fight, really. So I'm not that surprised. And yet, listen, we know how Glasgow works. You very rarely, or if ever, have both sides gone through quite a nice time at the same time. Usually it's one is, if one's doing well, the other one is feeling the brunt of it. And that's just the nature of the beast in this city. If one's up, the other's down. That's the yin and yang of Old Firm life. So with Celtic getting results, albeit not particularly impressively yet, But getting results, going to the Ibrox and winning with a kind of makeshift defence, pulling out results like that one at the weekend, every time they do things like that, it puts pressure on the other side. And unfortunately, when you get an inexperienced manager and the pressure getting turned up on them from within and from external sources, i.e. Celtic, it's a horrible combination to deal with. And I'm not surprised that eventually it's been that the Rangers managers end up with the pants and the head with the pencil up the nose. Unfortunately, that sends, listen, we've seen it sending experienced managers round the bend in this city. So it was incredibly difficult for him to deal with. But Celtic have compounded his problems by getting results when they're not been playing that well. Winning at Ibrox was a big one, because I think Rangers saw that as an opportunity to really put down a marker and get a better Celtic team. It hadn't started that great, had injury problems, obviously. The new signings hadn't really come in and done that well. So that was the door was open for Rangers at that game, and they didn't get the job done. So after that point, I think he was in big bother. Because you can't lose Old Firm games. I mean, he lost three out of four last season.
He won only one of six.
One of six. No manager in Glasgow survives that record. You have to get the better of your nearest and dearest in this city, and he didn't do that. So once he lost that game at Ibrox, I think the writing was on the wall. European exit, obviously seriously damaging the manner of it, and then domestically slipping up, it's been fatal. So I'm not surprised that if one team is shown a flexing and been dominant, the other one's going to suffer, and that means the manager pays the price.
Could you really, was it palpable at Ibrox at the weekend, Fraser? I mean, toxic. You could feel what was coming.
Yeah, it's toxic. I mean, for the moment, Rangers actually had four good chances to go ahead, and then Aberdeen did streak ahead in the 30th minute with a first effort and goal. And for that moment onwards, I mean, actually the half-time booing was way beyond what came at full-time, because half the ground had emptied. But those that had been at the Old Firm game a month ago said Saturday was even more toxic, even more brutal towards Beale than after the Celtic game, and that's saying something. And then afterwards, I mean, it was about an hour before Michael Beale came in to speak to the media, the press afterwards, and then you're thinking, aye, something's not right here. And he was a broken man, you could tell. He knew what was inevitable. And it's all Rangers' own doing. Could say it's all Michael Beale's own doing over the last few weeks, because it comes down to his signings, and they've been pretty woeful. Don't really put too strong a word on it. They've just not delivered, and the gulf between them and the champion Celtic seems to be bigger than it has been for a good few years. So if Rangers are looking for a new manager bounce, I think it's going to take a trampoline to kind of get to cut that gap. And that's all Celtic can do now is not pay any attention to it whatsoever, not let complacency creep in. The worst thing they could do is keep their eye on what's going on across the city. They just need to keep foraging ahead. As Michael says, there's only an upward trajectory with Celtic right now. And when the big players start hitting form, then the league will take care of itself.
Absolutely.
This is the problem that Rangers are going to have. I mean, you know, people are talking about recruitment now. They need to recruit a manager. They need to recruit a manager that's going to be able to take on Brendan Rodgers. And that's not going to be easy. That's what I'm saying. This is a guy with over 500 games managed in the English Premier League. Do you know what I mean? It's a serious operator who knows what he's doing. I mean, there's no panic. Very rarely any panic with Brendan Rodgers. Even if his team aren't particularly well, even if they lose, he doesn't panic. Seen it all before.
He also inherited a right good squad of players, Mick, which this next Rangers manager, oh dear. Oh dear. I mean,
well, this is the problem. I mean, the signings didn't look particularly great in the summer. So the new guy coming in has got to get a tune out of these guys and keep them. I mean, listen, it's only October. There's still the League Cup's there to be won. The league is still very much alive. I mean, Rangers last year, I thought it was weird how Rangers kind of wrote last season off when Van Bronckhorst left. It was almost kind of given to Michael Beale with a kind of proviso, just get to the summer and you can do your rebuild and we'll start again. There's still competitions to be won last year, and I'm not saying they wrote it off, but it wasn't far off it. They can't do that again in October. I mean, it's a long, long, long way to go. Celtic are not, see, they're not up to speed as yet. You got to think they're going to get better, but you think that they're trying to get somebody in that can actually make a fist of it. I mean, if the competitions are there, they won still. And then do they bring in or hold fire to the summer? Then they've got another rebuild in the summer. I mean, it's the Rangers are trapped in a kind of a difficult cycle just now. Celtic, I think, should be in a position to capitalise. I still think Celtic, for all they're dominating just now and they're ahead in the league, I still think they missed a chance in the summer to go and really tool up for Europe. I think they've left themselves short. So they can look across the city and think, oh, it's all easy, and they can stay one step ahead of Rangers with the bare minimum. I think they took the eye off the ball in Europe. I see it on this podcast every week. I still think they've sold themselves short in terms of Champions League. So I don't think Celtic... Listen, we're felling the trap. We're talking about Rangers here. Celtic should forget about Rangers and concentrate on themselves and make themselves better on a European stage. We'll find out this week again where they are, this campaign. But Celtic can't afford another summer like last summer. The 9 signings, none of them have really threatened to look like first-team regulars as yet. They need to concentrate on putting their foot down at home and getting themselves ready for Europe, either this year or beyond. They need to look beyond just being a bit better than Rangers.
I think that's the perfect note to end on, guys. Thank you very much if you're listening at home for tuning into the Record Celtic podcast. Mick Fraser, it's always a pleasure.
I'm glad to hear it. Cheers.
No worries, guys.
And we'll be back next week. Cheers, guys.